Scott Jennings, and today we're discussing ways that engineers manage failure, deflection, executive summary. In construction, or even after construction, when the permanent structure is built, engineers have predicted the behavior of the structure, and based on that behavior, they're trying to either control a failure or they're trying to minimize how a failure occurs, minimize the impact to the public or the structure itself. So herein are ways engineers engineer failure in both instances, both during construction and after construction when the permanent structure is standing. Goal of the engineer and society's expectation. Goal of an engineer? Pretty much life safety is number one, right? But you're also trying to, as an engineer, improve the quality of life. One way this is done is by predicting failure and then controlling it. Well, how do engineers control failure? Well, deflection is what we're talking about today, and deflection is a term used in engineering, and it's the distance that a structural member moves when it's under load. So, for instance, you ever been parked at a red light, and you're on a bridge, and the bridge starts bouncing? This is a bridge deflection or a bridge deflecting. It happens in airport concourses all the time. I've traveled around the country. You're sitting there at gate 27 and you're sitting in your chair and it starts bouncing up and down. Wondering what that is? Well, that's the actual steel beams under you deflecting. Happens in airports all the time, or malls, things like that, and it's usually steel. This deflection is managed in the design. It's calculated. You know, if you put a certain load at the middle of a span, the deflection can be calculated. And once you put too much load in the middle of the span, the beam will deflect too much and will start to fail. And that's obviously what engineers are trying to control. You're trying to control the deflection because, A, you don't want the beam to fail, but also you're trying to control the deflection so that the users of the airport or the bridge or whatever it may be aren't too nervous. And they maybe don't feel too much vibration and then don't feel uneasy and feel like the structure is going to fail. That's all in the deflection control of a structure. The only certainties in life, you've heard it, death, taxes, and that concrete will crack, right? That's the third certainty in life. I'm not sure that's exactly how the saying goes, but that's how it goes today. So that's the third certainty in life, is that you're going to die, you're going to pay taxes, and that concrete that you're standing on right now possibly is going to crack. If you're walking through a parking garage and you look up, you may see cracks at a beam's midspan right above you. Well, pre-stressed concrete has what's called a crack section. That's in the design process where they're planning on a structure to crack, and they try to manage that crack. This crack section is an example of ways that engineers engineer failure into a structure so they can control it. Same goes with a sidewalk, right? You walked on a sidewalk this morning. If you get back on your hands and knees when you walk out today from your office and you look inside those grooves in the concrete, there's probably a crack in the groove. Why? Because in a sidewalk, which is supposed to be 4 inches thick, where that groove goes in the concrete, now the concrete's only 3.5 inches thick. And because there's a thinner section there, the concrete wants to crack there. And the cracks are controlled by those joints inside the sidewalk. There's a method of structural analysis called plastic design. And this method of structural analysis is where the engineer tracks the failing of connections in, say, a steel frame. So what the engineer does is he breaks one connection in the frame, and then that will break the next one. And by breaking on paper all of these connections in a frame, you can see the method of analysis, and you can also do structural analysis on the capacity of a steel frame by doing it this way. But again, tracking, predicting failure. You ever seen a dog bone steel beam? A dog bone steel beam, if you look at a beam over top of the beam, so say you're standing on a beam and you look at the top flange of a beam, there'll be a necking down of the top flange of the beam where the top flange is at full width, call it 12 inches, and then it necks down to maybe 8 inches and then goes back again to 12 inches. That happens on the top flange and the bottom flange of a steel beam, and that's called necking, or it's called the particular term is a dog bone connection or a dog bone beam. And that's where, again, we're forcing the failure into a certain part of the beam, so we're able to predict the failure of the actual structure itself. My story, I was the project manager, 20 years or so ago on a pump station, and I was about 30 years old or so, and we had installed some sheet piles, and the sheet pile cofferdam around this pump station excavation. All the geometry was right. We had all the steel sheet piles installed in the right place. And if you've ever done sheet pile construction, you know that if it goes beyond a certain depth, maybe once the sheet pile is, say, the backside of it has full soil on it, right? And the inside is just a hole, right? So the sheet pile wants to fall into or deflect into the hole. You normally need to start putting braces, maybe 5 foot down to 12 foot down at most. You want to have a brace there to prevent the sheet pile from coming into the hole. So we drove all these sheets, and there was no brace at 5 foot. There was no brace at 12 foot. This thing was cantilevering in a certain section about 18 feet. Doable, but not, I don't want to say it's not safe because that's not true, but atypical, if you will. So you want to be careful when you have a cantilevered sheet pile with that much of a cantilever. So we had the entire pump station sheet pile installed, but we had this one section, and there was a sump pit we had to dig right in the front face of this particular section of the wall. And the engineer record had decided, well, we don't really need to brace the, we braced the cofferdam in enough places, but this particular excavation you have to do along just a few feet along the front side of the wall, no big deal. We're just going to let the sheet cantilever in that location, the 18 feet, and it is what it is. So he stamped the drawing. We installed it. The day that the sump pit excavation was supposed to go right on the front face of this wall with this going to be 18 foot of cantilever, we had put in enough sheet piles on the job that we knew what the behavior of the sheet piles were going to be. And cantilevering this wall 18 feet into a pump station hole was something that got my attention. So I walk out there, and we had just recently excavated, you know, that morning, right? I mean, not like a few days ago or a week or a month ago. I mean, it was excavated like right then and there that morning. So I went out there that day, right after we had done the excavation, and I'm standing on top of the wall. And there was a small little embankment, if you will, up above the sheet pile. And I'm standing on the embankment. It was granular soil. Well, why was that important? Because I'm looking down at the ground, and the soil is actually rolling down the hill under my feet. I can see a pebble roll, 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 roll. A grain of sand roll, 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 roll. Why? There's no vibration going on. No one's driving piles anywhere. There's no reason for the soil to be moving under my feet, but it's moving under my feet. And I had this concern that the sheet pile was going to move too much. So as the soil is rolling down under my feet, granule by granule, I go into panic mode, right? So I'm right there on the top of the sheet pile wall. I'm in Hawaii. It's whatever time it was, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I call back to my shoring engineer in Seattle. So what is it there? 7 p.m. at night, whatever it was, and I call him in a complete panic. You know, I'm 30 years old, haven't done that much sheet pile in my career thus far, and I call the engineer record, and he's whatever he was, 30 years older than me. He's been doing this since the dawn of time. I call him, and his name was Dick, and I said, "Hey, Dick, we got some movement in this wall." "Oh, which wall is this?" "Well, it's, you know, wall over here at grid line, you know, G3 or whatever it was, and you know, here's this large cantilever section. The wall is moving, and all the soil being retained behind the wall is my entire water retaining structure with about 100 piles under it. And if this wall falls into the hole, this is going to be super catastrophic, and no one's going to die, but we're going to lose a crap load of money and, you know, possibly put the company under." And he says, "Okay, it's wall such and such." I said, "Yeah, it's wall such and such right by the pump station." "Okay. Well, give me a call if the deflection hits 2 inches. Okay, is that it?" "Yeah, I'm going to go back to dinner." "Okay, Dick, I'll call you if the wall keeps moving and the granules of sand and dirt keep rolling down under my feet. You only want me to call you if the deflection reaches 2 inches." Yep, that's it." Okay. So the afternoon went on, and the wall stopped. And it stopped less than the 2 inches or whatever he had specified to me, and it didn't move anymore. You know, we eventually did the work inside, and everything got stable, and I removed the soil from my pants, and everything was good. So here was another example of engineered failure. You know, he knew the wall was going to rotate. He knew how much it was going to rotate because he's been doing it forever, and it happened. He was right not to panic. The wall did keep moving. The wall never hit his threshold. Everything was fine. But here again is the prediction of, I don't want to call it failure. I mean, he predicted the deflection of the wall, and all was good. It was a great learning experience. If you go to the article, by the way, there's a picture of I call it a crackometer. I guess it's actually called a crack gauge, but this is a great little, you know, $3 tool you can tape up on a wall somewhere, and you can actually measure the deflection of a crack, whether it's, you know, left to right or up and down or whatever. A great little tool you can buy and maintain your sanity, which is what I could have used in this particular case. Although the crack gauge wouldn't really work in this instance, you can monitor cracks, you know, via this way. But that's ways that engineers manage failure via deflection. Work safe.